Blog Talk Radio.
Working on a weekend like usual. Way off in the deep end like usual. Swear they passed us, they doing too much. Haven't done my taxes, I'm too turned up. Virgil got a paddock on my wrist going nuts. Caught me slipping once, okay, so what? Someone hit your block up, I tell you if it was us. Man, a house in Rosewood, it too plush. Say my day's a number, but I keep waking up. No, you see my text, baby, please say something. Wine by the glass, your man a cheapskate, huh? Gotta move off my release day, huh? This is fame, not clout. I don't even know what that's about. Watch your mouth. Baby got an ego twice the size of the crib. I can never tell it, it is what it is. Said what I had to and did what I did. Never turn my back on FBG, God forbid. Virgil got a paddock on my wrist, doing front flips. Giving you my number, but don't hit me on no dun. Working on a weekend like usual. Way off in the deep end like usual. Swear they passed us, they doing too much. Haven't done my taxes, I'm too turned up. Virgil got a paddock on my wrist going nuts. Caught me slipping once, okay, so what? Someone hit your block up, I tell you if it was us. Man, a house in Rosewood, it too plush.
It's cool, plush, man. Got red bottoms on. Life is good. You know what I mean? Like,
$100,000 for the cheapest ring on the finger, little. I done flew one out to Spain to be in my domain in automotive. Ooh, dropped $3 on the rain, cause it's been a truck, look. Ooh, I was in the shop serving, ain't been the same since. Ooh, granted she was standing right there while I catch play on the brick. Ooh, I made them look go haywire, Taliban in this. Ooh, I'd have been down bad in them trenches, had to ride with that stick. Ooh, who gave you pills, who gave that dust, Pluto sent you on the lick. Ooh, too many convicts that enrolled me to play in this. Ooh, crowd was nonsense, get old summer spreading this. They had the counter light, lighting it up, anybody could get it. Ooh, I'm on a PJ, lighting it up, backwood full of stickies. Ooh, I'm trying to tote that Draco in London, and it's extended. Ooh, they got a stretcher, how we gon' die for this? Ooh, yeah, I ride for my d***s, I lie for my d***s. Ooh, we some poor, high class, made it, we rich, yeah. I was at the band, though, got a penthouse for a closet. Ooh, it's like a Shando, lit on my neck, my wrist, ooh. I got being told they talk different languages. Ooh, $100,000 for the cheapest ring on the finger, little. Ooh, I done flew one out to Spain to be in my domain in automotive. Ooh, dropped $3 on the rain, cause it's been a truck, look. Ooh, I was in the trap circle, and they ain't been the same since. That's by the time I call her Serena. I go tremendo for new fettuccine. All fat though, carrot the pinky. All fat though, we bought her the Fiji. I'm in the loop with the voo, I'm in the loop with the woo. Which one you working? I put your face to the news. I put the on the shirt. After I merged it, make me go the hearse. Cost me a quarter bird. Gets birthed and you a maniac. I'm an alien. How you spurring? Got that kitty cat. I'm having fun with that. Going Birkin. $100,000 for the cheapest ring on the finger, little. Ooh, I done flew one out to Spain to be in my domain in automotive. Ooh, dropped $3 on the rain, cause it's been a truck, little. Ooh, I was in the trap circle, they ain't been the same since. Ooh,
$100,000 for the cheapest ring on the cheapest finger, look. $100,000 for the cheapest ring on the cheapest finger, look. $100,000 for the cheapest ring on the cheapest finger, look. $100,000 for the cheapest ring on the cheapest finger, look.
Same thing. Yeah, they got two. Come on now.
Thank you.
Hey, Raj.
Hello. Hey, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Everything, we're all okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don there?
That's good. No, Don's in the hospital.
He's in the hospital?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
He called me this afternoon.
Oh, my God. So, is Roy coming on?
Oh, yeah, I got to go to Roy. Yeah.
Do you have his number?
Yeah, hold on.
Roy's number? All right.
Yep, just a second.
I'm having problems with this computer. It was off for 3 months.
Hold on 1 second. His number's 813-731. I'm sorry? Yeah, I can do that. Hold on a minute. Yeah, I'll patch him in. Just a minute.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can live on a cruise ship going around the world for a year cheaper than you can live in there and in an assisted living.
Okay, we got Roger,
right.
Roy, and Frank together for the first time in several months.
That's right.
And there's a lot to talk about. But first of all, our prayers are answered, Frank.
Right. Yep. Just so everyone will know, this all started back 3.5 months ago. Don fell and hurt his and broke his hip. About a month after that, my wife fell and broke her hip and femur. And then I ended up in the hospital with major problems. So it's for all our true listeners, I apologize for being off so long, but there was just no way we could get the job done. So we're back, and Mr. Roy, you got a lot to talk about in Tampa, don't you?
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, but it's so good to have you back, Frank. Glad you're back home, and hopefully you're feeling better.
Much so, yes, sir.
Very good, very good. Well, yes, plenty going on here in Tampa. The Buccaneers are a surprising 2-0. The Tampa Bay Lightning are in training camp and with no plans to re-sign Steven Stamkos until at least after the season. So that's going to be some drama. The Tampa Bay Rays have announced that they are staying in St. Petersburg, and they have plans with the city to rebuild or build a new stadium right next door to the old one. And it's going to be part of a major redevelopment effort in what is known as the Gas Plant District, which is basically where they are right now. And so, I mean, there's good news and bad news there. You know, the good news is the Rays are staying in Tampa Bay, staying in St. Pete. The bad news is they're staying in the same place they are right now, which has always been an impediment to attendance because it just – it's just a it's kind of a no-go for so many people, you know, east of, you know, in East Tampa and beyond. So there's a bit of an issue there, and so we'll see how it goes. But just about anybody east of Kennedy Boulevard in Tampa, if anybody knows what that main drag is, it pretty much shuts them out, really. East and north of there, it's just very hard to get to the Trop, but the good news is the Rays are going to stay put, and we don't have to worry about Montreal coming and taking the team or them moving to Nashville or Portland or Vegas or anywhere else. So that's good news, and obviously the Bucks off to a great start. But we're going to find out what the Bucks are made of this weekend, guys. You know, Roger, I think maybe one way to go here early on, well, I'm with you guys for the next 20 minutes or so, is the NFC South, which nobody gave even a nod or a blink to prior to the start of the season, is suddenly proven to be a fairly competitive division. You got three teams, 2-0 there.
You're right, Roy. And, you know, I was going to talk about the Falcons because I watched that game on Sunday. You know, really exciting that, you know, down to the wire to the field goal at the end of the game. And they look very good. And I'm looking forward to, you know, now that we're back and we'll get settled in the next couple of weeks, to have Daryl Ledbetter on, our good friend and your good friend, to talk about the Falcons. But I'll tell you, they're 2-0, and the Eagles are 2-0. But the Eagles are a 2-0 that is not impressive because of what is expected of them. And, you know, I think that they'll straighten out. And I think some of the other teams in the league, and I think Detroit is one, I think is going to be tough to handle as the season goes on. And I feel the same thing about Jacksonville. But, you know, who would have ever thought that the Chiefs would lose their opening night game? You know, on that Thursday night. I mean, that was a surprise.
Yeah, clearly a surprise. But you know what? Hey, that's what the NFL is. I mean, it's a very there's parity everywhere. Anybody can upset anybody at any time. And I'm not concerned about the Chiefs. They came back in a game that a lot of people thought they would lose at Jacksonville. They came back and obviously took care of business there, which is good. For them. But, yeah, I mean, you say the Eagles have an unimpressive 2-0 record. Well, you know, maybe it gets to be an unimpressive 3-0 because they got the Bucs coming up next. And I think this is a real test for the Bucs. We're going to see what they're made of, because the Bucs haven't played anybody special. The Bears are the Bears. And the Vikings, proved in week one not to be as dominant a team or as good a team as I think they can be or will be. Obviously they, the Bucks figured out a way to, put together a very good second half against them and, come out winners. But I think the biggest surprise in Tampa is that, you know, and it's not a surprise to me, guys, but, Baker Mayfield is playing a pretty decent brand of football right now. He's playing at a high level. He's moving the ball. He's connecting with his top receivers, which he's got plenty of. He's making smart decisions with the ball. And the defense has proved to be quite advantageous, taking the ball away, creating scoring opportunities for the offense. So right now the Bucks are looking strong, but again, they haven't played anybody special yet. A real good test comes for them on Monday. If they beat the Eagles, guys, and the way the Eagles are playing, that's certainly possible. That'll be a wake-up call for the entire league to Tampa Bay. And certainly a wake-up call to the Eagles, who, as you know, Rodgers pointed out, haven't played probably at the highest level that they're capable of just yet.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I did want to go in a little direction for a second because there's so much that happened in the last several months. But our buddy Ira Kaufman was on, I guess he's on weekly with Chris Russo on Sirius XM. And he had a very interesting story, and you may know this story. I did not, but I did. He related, Roy, that he had not spoken to Warren Sapp in a number of years, and when he did, I think it was at the Hall of Fame, and the subject came up about John Gruden. And this NFL lawsuit about racism and everything else. And he said he had asked Warren Sapp if Gruden was a racist. And he said, absolutely not. And I think his exact quote was, hey, listen, I was raised in the South. I know a racist, and he is not a racist. And I just think there's so much that's going on behind the scenes with people that you're very familiar with because you dealt with them, You know, not only Warren Sapp, obviously you're good friends with Ira, but this Gruden situation, this lawsuit. I mean, it's just amazing some of the stuff that is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'll say this. I mean, obviously we're, you know, a couple of years behind the, you know, the curve on this, obviously, with the John Gruden thing. But I was, you know, I mean, I wasn't surprised to hear about some of the emails going back and forth. You know, some of the homophobic comments, not really surprised that that was there. But the racist stuff, that I never saw any indication of that with John Gruden. John Gruden was, you know, is a guy who, you know, as a football coach, he just wants somebody you can get the play right and execute it. He wants someone at a high level. He wants, he prefers veterans over rookies, and he doesn't care, you know, what you look like or, you know, how old you are necessarily. Certainly it doesn't matter how old you are. He just wants someone who's capable of doing the job. And so, no, I agree with Warren Sapp. I don't think John Gruden is a racist. I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised that Warren Sapp would have John Gruden's back there.
Well, that's good news. And I called Don about it when I heard this, and obviously it was news to both of us. But we don't follow the inner workings with lawsuits and the NFL and, you know, and things like that. So getting back to a more positive a trend in sports, getting back to the Rays and they're staying in Tampa or in St. Pete. You know, I've been there several times. You're 100% right. It is tough. You got to spend some time to go over the causeway, the bridge, and everything else. But the only thing I can say is looking at what the Braves have done with the Battery. They wanted to stay down where Turner Field is, and the city didn't cooperate. That's an old story. But they have done a magnificent job of with hotels, condos, making it a destination. Now, it's not that long of a drive from downtown Atlanta, except you got a lot of traffic to get to the Battery in Smyrna. Because it's just on the fringe of Cobb County, but my thinking is if you make it a destination where you can make it go there for hours, okay, not just, you know, for a game, I think that can change a lot of people's perspective. I don't know whether you agree with that or not, but I'd like to have your opinion.
No, I think you're right. It's what you have to do. I mean, right now, Tropicana Field, for those who don't know the area or don't know anything about it, there's nothing there. There is nothing there. There is one sports bar across the street, and it's been there for a long time. It's a very popular place, but it's one sports bar. There's also a block of some nice shops and restaurants, but it's a block, and there's nothing else. And, you know, it's Tropicana Field, much like most stadiums, is surrounded by parking lots because they don't have a parking garage. They have lots. And those lots stretch for, you know, half a mile in either direction. And they border kind of an industrial area and then a residential area that's, you know, not high end. And, you know, it's just there's nothing. It's not a destination. There's not a whole lot to do around there prior to a game or after a game. So I think what, you know, the Rays have done that's smart is they've partnered with the city of St. Petersburg, and the plan is to make the new stadium part of a development project where they're going to bring in a lot more retail opportunities for people, a lot more, housing, high-end housing, condominiums, that kind of thing. And it's going to be a destination. A lot more restaurants, shops, that kind of, you know, it's going to be a place to go. The problem is it's not on the water. And, you know, that could taint the whole theory, because basically you're going to go down there and, yeah, it's going to be nice, but if it's not on the water, well, okay, then it's really not any different than, you know, downtown, you know, Kansas City, and or downtown Minneapolis. And, you know, so that could be a bit of a challenge, but at least they've put, you know, the plan is there to put this stadium in the middle of something that is, you know, going to attract people. And hopefully it does, because let's face it, I mean, nobody wants to see the Rays struggle with attendance. It's awful that they do, but as you pointed out, you know, there's two bridges to get over to that area in Tampa, and there's three, you know, there's three different, four different ways to get over into that county, but there's two bridges that take you down into that, into the area where the stadium is, and they're both very narrow, you know, they're two lanes. And it's just, you know, not, well, one's two lanes going each way. The other one's about, you know, four or five lanes going each way, but it's still not enough. On game days, it's just a hassle. It's just really difficult to get out there. And we'll see. It would be nice if, you know, if they could also partner with the city of Tampa and Hillsborough County, which is the adjoining county, and somehow figure out a way to get some kind of mass transit system together to get people from Tampa over to St. Petersburg, you know, without having to, you know, drive over the bridges and park. If that can somehow be done, obviously you're talking about a light rail system, maybe even a monorail system.
Right.
But that would be I guess the way to put that would be so forward thinking that it's almost far too forward thinking. Even though those are things that are everywhere now, and they've been in, you know, Disney World since the 70s, Florida is pretty backwards in a lot of ways, and that's one of them. It's a Republican state. They're going to turn down federal money. They've already turned down the federal money that was offered 10 years ago during the Obama administration to build a high speed rail system that could have connected the two communities. So they're way behind on that, but that's probably the only way that you're ever going to get people from, you know, eastern Hillsborough County and northern Hillsborough County over into St. Petersburg on a regular basis to go watch a baseball game, because it's just too difficult to get over there and get back in a timely manner.
Well, that's how Pittsburgh, you get into the Steelers and the Pirates. They have a light rail system from the South Hills. In Cleveland, when I went to the Indians game several times, we were way outside the city, I took the light rail. And I will say this, and we've talked about it on the show in different segments, about the 76ers, you know, want to build their own facility in downtown Philadelphia, and it's caused all kinds of problems because of the Chinese community, which Don and I and I think Frank feel the same way. It is absolutely the dumbest idea. And maybe now that Josh Harris is all tied up with the Commanders, he'll forget about that idea. But what they are going to do at the stadium complex, they have a big hotel casino there now. They are going to make it more of a destination for other than games. They have Xfinity Live, but that, you know, is limited in size. But they're going to have shops and everything, and yet still have a nice residential community without unsettling the people. You saw that, didn't you, Frank, about what that plan is? And I think that's a really smart idea to make the stadium complex even a more of a destination. So, and you got the transportation because the subway goes right there. So it makes it easy. But you're right,
you know,
Roy.
Roger,
I think, yeah.
Roger, when it comes to politics in Philadelphia, the whole reason for getting what you really want is throw the water out before the baby.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. And But it'll be interesting to see what happens. Well, let's talk. I don't know how long you can stay, Roy, but we'll have to. We do need to talk about the upcoming hockey season. And was that a surprise that the Lightning won't make that big sign-up?
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise to me. I mean, actually, I think it's a big surprise. I shouldn't say bit of a surprise. No, it is a big surprise. Let's face it, you're talking about the face of the franchise. Clearly the best player that's ever played. Well, after Marty St. Louis, the best player that's ever played for the team. Sure, almost certain Hall of Famer. And he's coming off two very good seasons and you know, two of his more healthy seasons as well. It's almost like Steven Stamkos has kind of turned a corner here and, in terms of health and and playing, full seasons and being available to the team and playing at a little bit higher level on a regular basis. I am surprised. But, listening to the general manager today, Brian, I get it. I mean, it makes sense. And I think what they want to do is I think they want to evaluate this team over the course of the next 6 to 9 months and say, okay, well, where are we going forward? Steven Stamkos he's going to be 30-plus years old now. So, is he someone that you can afford to pay for past accomplishments at such a high level in a salary cap era when you've got a bunch of young kids coming up as it is? This is a team that's had to move out some players that have proved to be pretty darn good over the course of time in the last few years. And, they would love to have some of those guys, as part of their team now. And in order to keep certain players like Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, some of the others, they may have to make a tough decision and let a guy like Steven Stamkos go just because they can't afford him, or figure out a more unique way to structure the contract. Again, I think they just want to see where they are. They've got the control right now. I don't think Steven Stamkos is the kind of guy who's going to let this bother him. If anything, it'll fuel them more, and that may just make the decision for them right then and there. But I think they want to see how some of the prospects look, going forward, and if they look good and they feel like they can get similar production out of another guy, they may very well do it. Because let's not forget the downside of Steven Stamkos. And I just got done saying that he's proved to be a little bit more than this over the last couple of years. But for a long time, he's basically just kind of a power play sniper. Now, granted, that's big. But, the way to beat the Lightning is to stay out of the penalty box. Make them play 5-on-5 and beat you 5-on-5. It may be a case where as long as you've got Vasilevskiy playing at the level he plays at in goal, you can win 3-2, 2-1, 4-3. You don't need 5-6 goals a game. And if that's the case, well, then Steven Stamkos can become expendable. I think it's something they'll look at prudently. I don't think there's any plans to get rid of Steven Stamkos, but I think it's not a bad idea to just say, hey, let's see how things look. Let's see where we are, at the end of this coming season. Let's see how much how valuable he really is to us at that point. He may prove to be extremely valuable, invaluable, but at the same time, he may prove to be expendable. So let's wait and see. I don't think it's a bad idea.
No, I don't either. And I'll tell you another good idea in the NHL, and I honestly did not – I don't know whether they've even done it previously, but they've been showing it a lot on NBC Sports Philly, and I watched it one night. For quite a while, they've had a rookie game between the – Rangers and the Flyers rookies. And I think that's a great idea that could be implemented, in spring training in baseball, where you have some rookie games. And I think, maybe that's what you need to do during training camp to get a little more interest in the NFL in those preseason games.
That makes a lot of sense too. That's a great idea, Roger. Because what a shock! The NHL kind of being the trailblazer here on this again. Again, one of these days I'm going to put together that list, guys, and it's extensive of what the NHL did long before everybody else. That everybody else now looks at and sees as common. But But that may be one of them. And you know what? You're going to see a lot of that here in the preseason. The NHL is going to have a lot of preseason games on the NHL Network, and obviously those are showcases for the prospects. The regular players don't get a lot of time in those games, but the NHL is doing a pretty good job of trying. Look, everybody's into prospects now. Everybody's into rookies, draft picks, who's coming up next. So you know what, Roger, it's an absolutely great idea. I would absolutely love to see rookie showcases. And two or three of them, you know, have one a week, you know, have a rookie showcase of some kind, and you know, let the kids get some exposure and see what everybody's got down on the farm. It's not a bad idea at all.
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, it caught my attention, and I watched it because it's you're going to laugh about this, but I can't get YouTube TV on my TV, so how I watch TV is on my iPad. Okay, when I want to watch TV. And so you flip through the channel. Hey, wait a minute. Here's something new. I don't have to watch the junk that's on TV and all the repeats and stuff I'm not interested in.
Well, so, you're not alone, Roger. You're not alone. Let me tell you something. I'll leave you with this, guys. On many nights during the week, my wife has something that she prefers to watch on the TV, and I let her watch that, and that's when the iPad goes on in front of me, and I'll sit there and watch it with her, but I'm paying attention to the Cubs game or a football game or a hockey game on the iPad. So you're not alone, my friend. You are not alone.
I'm glad I'm in good company, my brother.
You are. You are indeed. And I'll leave you guys with that. Have a great week. Frank, glad to hear you're back. Our prayers were answered. Good to hear you, hear your voice again. Roger, good to be with you again. And
you
let's get Don back next week and do this the way we should.
Okay, absolutely.
Yes,
take care, Roy. God bless. Have
Thanks
a great week.
Guys. All right.
Take care.
Hey, now we're going
you know, Frank,
to our,
I'm glad I'm in good company when watching TV on an iPad, okay, with
yeah.
Roy Cummings. Believe me, I feel better right now than I have.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Roger, we got very big news out of, I guess, Orlando would be the headquarters for Disney. Our local correspondent's right on it. Trevor, how you doing tonight?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing great.
Hey, Trevor,
great.
Good to talk to you. We haven't talked to you in quite a while. I heard you're very busy with your job.
Yeah, work, and then I've been doing my podcast with my brothers and my friends for a while, so that's where my spare time goes, you know?
Well, give us an update about everything going on in Orlando and that news about in St. Petersburg that they're going to build a new stadium. You know, we all thought that possibly Pat Williams was going to get the team if they move to Orlando, and I think, as I recall, he has like 25,000, 23,000, commitments to season tickets. So what do you think? I think baseball is going to expand. I don't know when and whether Orlando is considered, obviously, I don't know. What about it? What exactly is going on in Orlando? I know it's a lot. There's a lot of activity there 24 hours a day.
I did hear about the Rays Stadium, but I was actually here to talk about the massive news out of the USFL and XFL. They plan to merge their operations. Redbird Capital, the big financial backer behind ESPN and Disney, approached Fox and the USFL with merging, opportunities. They wanted to kind of get out from under the massive hole that they're in. They were offering all their jobs, like assistant GMs, and then, you know, their coaching staff jobs, they were making them seasonal positions, so they weren't able to pay people. The Vegas team doesn't even have a venue or a home right now. They kind of left that. They lost $60 million in the first season. So they're kind of – you can tell that it's kind of game over. So we're going to see a massive shift in spring/summertime football, and I think it's huge news. And like I've been saying, even on this show – I knew this would happen, and even some of my friends like Logan and, you know, my little brother Caden, they were talking about this. You know, there probably will have to be a time for these two leagues to merge, but I didn't expect it to be like this. I didn't think that PN and Disney would kind of be just kind of like wiping their hands clean of this thing. But it gives a lot of growth for the USFL. I don't know what's in store, but a lot of more news will be coming out this week. But just a massive, massive headline for football in general. It's great for the game.
And so what's going to happen, correct me if I'm wrong, the XFL is basically out of business, and the USFL is going to be in business, and they're going to be stronger and better financed than even before. Is that right?
Well, it's awesome to think about that, because they are going to be acquiring not only all the talent, the players, some of the coaching staff, people that decide to stay, but they're going to be able to grow this league into potentially a 12-team league. And it's going to probably be an even longer season and probably an extra week of playoffs. It's just going to be overall really awesome. But as far as the brand, when these two operations merge, I'm going to assume here today that it is going to be still remaining the USFL. After all, Redbird Capital did approach Fox and, the USFL to kind of merge. So I imagine the USFL's guys and their teams in place, they have the say, and they'll have to probably either adapt. Maybe some teams will relocate or change. But I don't see, much of the historic USFL franchises as of late, like the Philadelphia Stars or the Birmingham Stallions. I don't see some of those clubs getting rebranded, because they've done such a great job in two seasons, almost kind of predicting this move, because they've been patenting and verifying all their old logos and uniforms and team names. So I imagine we're going to see a big kind of change up, not only for the league, but for some of the locations of teams, where the venues are, and maybe overall, maybe some of the uniforms will change and maybe some new team names. But I think that they're going to adjust just fine. It's very strange. My initial reaction was, this is a very strange move at this time, because it's a big jump financially for either side. So it's going to take a lot of brain power for them to make sure to do this right, because it could go horribly right or it could go horribly wrong, and we'll have to wait and see.
Well, if it goes right. Yeah, go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, right, because we have a young player from that team, from that league, that's online with it. Hold on.
Is that the young Vinny Papale?
Oh, wow, Vinny Papale. That's awesome.
I know we had plans to have him on, Trevor, but, Don was out and Frank was out, and this is the first night back. But do you feel where, like, the Stars would move to Philadelphia and play, at the Link or Franklin Field or whatever, okay? I could see where it could benefit the Eagles to have a more summer activity there. What's your opinion about that?
I completely agree. We saw that with the Michigan Panthers. They drew a pretty good sizable crowd at Ford Field. They were playing, obviously, in the offseason of the Lions, but it brought back a lot of memories to some of these communities that have had USFL teams, back in the 80s. And I really do believe that they would benefit from getting the big city market kind of teams like Philadelphia and New Orleans, get those teams in there, focus on them and market them in their home, kind of market in a sense. And you can see, I imagine we'll see a massive audience rise in person, because the hub system, financially it worked for the league, but it wasn't the best vibe on field, I imagine. But it genuinely did progress through season two, especially, speaking of Vinny Papale, I'm sure he could talk about a bunch of the crowd. Like, there was a lot of people at Simone's Liberty Bank Stadium in Memphis, and they were showing love to the Memphis Showboats this past season. But just overall, I think popularity will increase. The main question is the money with getting some of these venues. I know it's very expensive. I can't even guess how much it would be to kind of like rent or lease a stadium. But it's a lot of logistic work, and I know they've been working behind the scenes to maybe get some of the original eight of the USFL teams to their home, you know, markets, but we'll have to see, you know, especially with this merger, you know, we don't know if they're going to keep some USFL teams or get rid of some and kind of have to relocate guys. And it's going to be a big logistical movement in this, you know, in the next coming months before season three, because that's when they plan to merge operations before the 2024 season.
Right. Frank is the guest with us.
Yes, he is. Vince Papale Jr.
Hey, Vinny, we finally get to have you on because we've been off due to a lot of health issues with Don and Frank. But I'll tell you what, I talked to your dad several times, and Trevor is with us, and he is really an aficionado when it comes to the USFL, one of their biggest fans. But congratulations on a great season that you had in the USFL.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun one.
Trevor,
Vinny, feel free to jump in. Big fan. Awesome to get to speak with you. Got to watch you on TV, and now I'm talking to you on the phone. Maybe one day I could have you on my podcast if you're ever, you know, down in the Bay Area. But I have so many questions for you. But my biggest question is, what is it like playing with a massive quarterback in Cole Kelly? I was going to say a behemoth man, but – you know, massive. Like, what is it like playing with a guy like that? I just wanted to ask you.
No, Cole's definitely, he's big, man. He's a big dude. And the crazy thing is he can move well, too. I'm sure you watch the games. He got a lot of first downs on his feet. So he made a lot of plays, and he can hang in there, take a hit, make a throw. It was just really cool just seeing him sort of basically come off the bench and progress and develop on that 5-0 run that we went on. He was definitely a big part in that. And obviously, we can't miss him.
Another big question for me. Like, you obviously were a part of a team that was rebranded. What was it like kind of transitioning into the new, obviously, home field and getting in touch with the Memphis community? Was that something that you didn't see in season one as much, obviously, with the hub system, but did you feel like more in touch with the community, like in Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the first season was, I don't know how else to describe it other than just saying it was weird playing for Tampa Bay and being in Birmingham the entire time. If you weren't playing Birmingham, it really felt like a high school game, even less than that. Sometimes there are less fans in a high school game in the stands. So it was definitely interesting, and we didn't really have a fan base from Tampa. I don't think most people from Tampa even knew they had a USFL team. So when I found out we were going to Memphis, it was pretty refreshing to know that we were going to have some fans and play for a city because, I mean, me personally, and I know a lot of other guys, that's why a lot of guys play. Like, you want to play for something bigger than yourself. And I know we're going on this different path trying to make it ultimately to the NFL, but you also want to play meaningful football, and playing in front of fans is meaningful football, and playing in front of a city makes it that much better. And it sort of wipes away that whole NFL thing, like, because it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, you're playing football. And it was cool. And the city of Memphis really, really welcomed us, and they were great throughout the whole season. I think we had the best fan base, but obviously I'm biased.
Hey,
that's
well,
understandable.
Down here in Florida on TV, it definitely looked like they were showing up for Memphis. And my next question, and this is, you know, I don't want to get too into the nitty-gritty or anything, but which cornerback in this league talked the most trash to you? If there was any real big talk, I just really want to know.
I don't know. That's a tough question.
Maybe nobody did because what are they going to say to you? You're doing such a fantastic job.
Yeah, no. They didn't talk too much crap to me, but some of them got the best of me a few times. They got some good licks on me, that's for sure. But, I don't remember anything specific or a guy that stood out for talking too much trash. So, and I usually stick to myself as far as that respect. I just sort of let my play do the talking.
That's smart. You know, Trevor and Vinny and Frank, when you were talking about the size of the quarterback, I got to tell you, you look at some of these young quarterbacks in the NFL and their size, but I don't know. I know, Vinny, you're a big Eagles fan, and I don't know whether you saw post-game on that Thursday night game with Smart walking next to Jordan Davis. I mean, to tell you, Jordan Davis is huge. I mean, I watched him in Georgia. Oh, he is a big dude. And it was so funny. It looked, it was definitely Mutt and Jeff that, Frank, you and I relate to, but the younger fellows probably have no idea who Mutt and Jeff are.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we're joined by another aficionado, and that's Big Mike Schultze from the Outback Bowl. Mike, how you doing?
Mike, how are you? Well, we'll get Mike. Vinny and Trevor, jump in anytime. Vinny, one of the things I did want to ask you was that when we had your dad on, there was some indication that maybe some of the NFL teams had expressed an interest in you. Was that the case? And if it was, give us a little bit of the lowdown on exactly what the process was and what evolved with you.
I ultimately ended up having a workout with the Cleveland Browns in August, sort of a week into training camp. Ideally, obviously, you want to be signed before then, before they report to training camp, but wasn't the case for me. I had a workout with the Browns. I thought it went really well. They thought it went really well. They just didn't pull the trigger at the time, and that was really the only workout I got and opportunity I got. So, I mean, it is what it is, but, yeah, I mean, you never know. There's teams calling guys in for workouts every week here now. So, I mean, I'm in shape, but if that doesn't happen, I'm in shape for the next season to come around, whether it be the USFL, XFL, USXFL, whatever it is. So.
Well, let me say this, and that's very smart. There was a young man, I did his, and he went to the high school where my kids went, Nottingham in Hamilton, New Jersey, and he played at Rutgers. And he did play in the NFL, you know, for a couple of teams, and he got called up, I think it was by Carolina, I'm sure it was. And I asked him, I said, where were you when you got called to come in? He said, I was in a movie theater, in the theater watching a movie. And he told me the whole story, and so that's why you never know. And I meant to bring up with Roy earlier about the Nick Chubb sad situation that occurred the other night. I was living in Georgia. It was very sad. He's a class act young man. I remember when he came in to take over because of an injury at Georgia, and I followed his career, and to see a fine young man and a great player to take a hit like that that unfortunately causes a serious injury. We all we can do is send out our best wishes and prayers. But the best thing is like what you were saying, and your dad knows. I'm sure he's told you a million times. Stay in shape because you know the NFL next man up. That's the motto.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is a lot of guys sort of tend to take their foot off the gas pedal, I guess, in this period if you haven't got a call yet, and then next thing you know, you could be just sitting there and your phone rings and they want to bring you in. You got to be ready. So I've just always been sort of the kind of guy that never know when that phone's going to ring, and I never want to not be ready. So I stayed really since my season ended in the USFL. I didn't really take much time off, maybe a week, and then I was right back in the gym. So I don't feel like I lost much.
Do you see any future in the USFL this next season?
I'm curious to see what happens, but I mean, like I said before, everyone's goal in that league is to get back to the NFL. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great what they're doing. They're giving guys opportunities, and I think maybe them having one league and one entity in the spring would make it that much better, just for exposure and having that fan base that we talked about. It would make it more lucrative for guys to maybe want to stay for an entire career. So I'm curious to see how it'll play out, but I'm excited about the opportunity moving forward, whatever that may be or however it may look. But, yeah, I'm excited about it.
That's great. Anyway, we appreciate your time and trouble for being on with us tonight. Trevor, you have a last question?
Trevor, you got a question for Vinny?
He said no.
Oh, okay.
We got to move on here to Caden. Vinny, I'll be in touch with you again. We'd like to do this every when Don's here in about a month or so. And I hope everything goes well. Say hello to your dad. He's always been one of my favorites.
Absolutely, mine too. And I'll tell you, they're still showing the movie. It's I'll tell you this. Yeah, and I am involved as an educational assistant in a middle school, and I was telling some of the players, the middle school football players, I said, go check it out. It's a great movie. So, you know, they're football fanatics. So they watch it. Well, they're watching it. Well, listen, Vinny, you take care. Best wishes. We'll be interested in following you. And like Frank said, we'll be in touch and look forward to talking to you regularly throughout the football season.
All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the support, as always.
Take care.
I appreciate you.
Hey, yeah, thanks, guys. Bye.
Caden? What's the news on the soccer front?
Soccer front, we just had some Champions League games roll in. My team was selected in what some may call the group of death. It's usually a nickname to the group stage, and it's whatever group has just the hardest teams in it. And it basically means that no matter what, two good teams are not making it on, are not moving on. And that really does suck. But sadly, my team is in it. Brandon's team is in it, which is he's a part of the Tea Times Network family. And it's kind of like a whole mumbo jumbo in the soccer world right now, because you got early Premier League going on. Champions League draws just went on, and all these different, you know, teams are making their marks. These different players are emerging, like Jude Bellingham for Real Madrid has 5 goals in 5 games. And a guy named Takefusa Okubo, who's taking the La Liga by storm. He has, I believe, 2 goals and 4 assists in 5 games. And now Real Madrid just went on to squeak by in the Champions League group stage, which was it was kind of a little bit of an iffy spot for them, and another iffy spot. Well, I wouldn't say iffy spots. They did play really well. Is FC Barcelona? They're not in the easiest group either. I'd say they have some really nice testers in that group to see if they can move on. They should move on. They have the expectations to move on. They have the history to move on. But there is one thing really cool about Barcelona. I want to take a little bit of a little second out of the section to talk about it. Is the guy named Lamine Yamal, who plays for Barcelona right now. He's the youngest Champions League Barcelona debutant ever. He's the youngest La Liga goal scorer ever. He's 16 years old. And today he just became the second youngest UCL debutant in Champions League history, which is absolute. If you're watching that game, you witness history and special stuff going on with that club. But I wanted to take a little second to talk about AC Milan, my club. We went out there in a game that I feel like a lot of people were doubting us, because leading up to this game, we had just lost 5-0 to our biggest rivals, and it hurt. It really did. We haven't beaten our biggest rivals in a long time. 5 games in a row, we haven't beaten Inter Milan, and it's not looking too good for us right now. We're not on the, I would say, up and up in the league. Even though going up to that game, I thought we were going to go in there and smack them. I thought we were going to turn the tides, you know, change the narrative, if you will. And it was the complete opposite. So going into this Champions League game, morale was down. Going up against the team that we had just sold one of our best wonder kids to, Sandro Tonali. And he came out there. He did pretty well. You know, sadly, Milan, they did well. On the attacking side of the ball, defensive was iffy here and there. Our back four was on lock. Man of the match was probably Fikayo Tomori. He kept Alexander Isak in his pocket the entire game, which, if you know who any of those players are, you know that Alexander Isak is one of the best forwards in soccer right now. And he's so elusive, strong, and tall that it makes anyone who's defending him an absolute mismatch. And Fikayo Tomori had him in his pocket the entire game. Didn't let him get any shots on target. Didn't let him get a shot at all. And absolute lock up by him in his first game back since his red card. But the attacking side of the ball lacked composure. It lacked goal-scoring prowess. We were lacking decision-makers in front of the net. Leao was dancing around like he always does. He had this one absolutely beautiful run down the sideline, and then into the box, he, you know, did a little step back, duked out two defenders, and you know what? He saw the glory right there. He tried to get a little bit fancy with it, a little bit too fancy. He slipped on the ball, trying to do a back heel into the back left corner. And watching that was absolutely heartbreaking because he was right in front of the net, 1v1 opportunity to break the ice. And we would have won if we didn't go for the flare. And you saw the glory, went for the flare, tried to be cool for the cameras. Didn't work out so well for us. And then
was that game yesterday?
That game was yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I got a question for you about the coverage on CBS Sports Network. I was in a restaurant having two bowls of soup because they had two that I love. And Frank, you're familiar with it on Baltimore Pike in the middle of media, okay? And I got to tell you, I cannot figure out, and maybe one of you can square me away, I cannot figure out why they have four people at the anchor desk on the CBS Sports Network, and then interviewing the guy or a reporter that's on site overseas. I think it's a waste of time, a waste of money, and a waste of people, because you do not have a good flow where you're going to stay with like two anchors and get to the interview and everything. You got to have this woman who I have no idea who she is. You got a lot of curly hair.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely ridiculous. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I believe she was one of the rules specialists. Like, you'll watch some of the NFL or USFL. And
no, that's another woman that's the NFL rules specialist. This was
soccer. Yeah, no, this is soccer.
Okay,
it's
you're talking about the woman with the curly hair. Okay.
Yeah, it's the same principle as when they call in a rules specialist for NFL. She was she didn't have the radio in her, I guess. She wasn't really speaking that well, and she did kind of ruin the flow. I'll give you that. But it is the same as just calling in like a rules specialist to check up on, to, you know, give the people a more in-depth breakdown of what was happening in the game, because there was some questionable calls here and there towards the game, and especially in the attacking part of the play, and some goals and some attacking chances that probably could have been created weren't created or were let on too long because of a penalty. that wasn't called or was called too late or called too early. So they were just calling in on the rule specialist to give a little bit more of an in-depth explanation on what was going on in the pitch.
Okay. But I'm glad that you see the way I looked at it, that it was just too much with four people at that anchor desk. I mean, you don't need that. And then when you look at ESPN, the way what they've cut back on Monday Night Football, it's basically Scott Van Pelt, maybe another guy. I know one time they go out and they have some for a short period of time, but it's not like it's a two-hour or three-hour show like they used to have either, you know, going into Monday Night Football because they've cut let go of so many people. But I looked at that and I said, my gosh, unless you're a real strong soccer fan, you got lost in the shuffle on that.
Yeah.
That coverage.
And, I will agree with you on that because I do believe the people on that show are Kate Adbo, Thierry Henry, Jamie Carragher, and Micah Richards. And they do put on a good post show. I'll say that. They're very entertaining when it comes to post show. And especially like halftime as well, they make it really interesting and they make it, you know, funny as well. And it does make sense to, you know, you would get lost in what they're saying if you're not really familiar with the sport because they use a lot of soccer terminology and when they talk about stuff that, you know, only they really know about. Even when I watch them, I'm like, you know, what did they just say? Like, am I missing something? But I do like their posting.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. I mean, my kids played soccer. My granddaughter plays soccer. I broadcast soccer. But I'll tell you, I'm not an expert. I'm not like you. I'm not like Mike Simczak. I look at the scores. I will be, I used to watch the United a lot in Atlanta. And the Union used to be on Channel 17. But now it's pretty much limited on over-the-air TV for the MLS. That's what I saw yesterday.
And again, it's that's another thing that's really frustrating when it comes to watching these different leagues is you need like five different subscriptions to all these different things if you actually want to watch the games you want to watch. Like if you want to watch Premier League, you either have to have Peacock or Hulu. If you want to watch MLS, you have to have Apple TV. If you want to watch Serie A or Champions League, you got to have Paramount Plus. If you want to watch Europa League, you got to have Paramount Plus. If you want to watch La Liga, you got to have Hulu. You got to have Premier League TV. You got to have all this different stuff just to watch all the games that you want to watch, just because they want to, you know, milk you for all your money. And that's the big. Like no, that I hate about soccer is that I have to, you know, go and watch on all these different platforms to watch the games I want to watch.
Well, you're Frank. You and I lived through 3, 6, 10, and 12, and 12. One time I remember it was a commercial used to do the Phillies games during the week, WDEL TV when we were young, and then of course it became a PBS. Bill Pfeiffer, I remember, was doing the pregame shows on the old WDEL. But anyway, Bill Pfeiffer, you know. But the so what's your feeling about how the teams are doing the MLS and what do you think the playoffs? I looked at the standings the other day and. The Union looked pretty good. They had that one game, I think it was, last week when I think they have 5 goals, as I recall. I've been so busy with school, I'll tell you, I haven't had time to pay much attention to watching TV. But go ahead.
Me too. And I don't really watch the MLS that much just because I like to, like if I watch soccer, if it's not watching like my local team, like the Tampa Bay Rowdies, it's got to be high-level soccer or else I really don't enjoy it. And there are some really good parts of the MLS, but then I'll watch a game and I'm just like what is going on? Like, what am I watching? Like, I shouldn't even be watching this. And it's always an exception when Messi plays because Messi is Messi. He always brings that certain bit of class, and it helps out that they have Sergio Busquets, one of the best CDMs in history, and Jordi Alba, one of the best left backs in Barcelona history. And it helps that they have those players in the league, so you have a team that you can really watch and enjoy week after week. That is, if Messi actually plays, which I don't know if y'all heard about what happened the other night when they played Atlanta United. Did you hear about that?
No, go ahead.
So Messi, and this is pretty crazy, in Messi's entire life, he has never, ever, he's never played on turf, ever. He's never played a singular minute on turf in his entire life. And Atlanta United, their pitch is made out of turf. So he didn't want to play, and he didn't play. He stayed home. He stayed in Miami instead of going to the game and playing.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's pro and con about the turf. And I mean, mm-hmm. after a couple of injuries in the NFL.
Yeah, Kenny Galladay, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
so
yeah, Aaron Rodgers especially. You're right. But then if they look at the statistics, and you're not going to have the owners that are going to go for that, because look at how long it would take to convert when you have a concert of 70,000 people where all of that money goes right into the owner's pocket. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Or in Giants or at the MetLife Stadium, it goes into the authorities' pocket. Okay,
yeah,
because they own the stadium. It's not like at the Link; it's owned by the Eagles, or up in Foxborough, it's owned by the Kraft family. So I don't think that's going to ever happen. I remember that the Kraft family, that was a natural turf up in Foxborough, and then they went to the artificial turf. So, mm-hmm. but we also, I was there when the Baltimore Ravens refused to go on the field and play the Eagles years ago at Veterans Stadium because in a preseason game because of the turf. So, he must have must be very skeptical of what could happen to him, and
he's 30. I mean, he's 35 years old. He realized that his are worth billions of dollars, and he wants to keep his most valuable asset safe. And I can't blame him for it. And especially going towards that, the whole they make money off of using the stadium for other things, and that is that's completely right. And it's all about the money. The reason they don't change it, but I have one amazing solution that Real Madrid came up with in the Santiago Bernabeu and their stadium is they have a grass removal system where these massive each piece of grass is a massive section, and they take it out and it robotically removes the pitch, removes the grass and everything, and stores it under the field, so it's just a big concrete level, and they hold festivals and concerts on that, and all within preserving the grass, doesn't get messed up. They use real grass, and the only setback is, they're using real grass is it's extremely expensive, and nobody wants to pay that money unless they have the money, and soccer money is just different, and that's when we need to revolutionize the sport over here, because they were talking about. There's a World Cup in 2026 is in America. The World Cup's coming to America. The very next World Cup is coming to America. And they're trying to convert all turf to grass in America by 2026, or at least all the stadiums that are planned to be played for the World Cup in America, they're all being changed to grass.
Well, that's going to be interesting.
I'm glad you brought up that cost. Because we have a guy on the line that would know exactly what that's probably going to be, Mr. Mike Schulze. Mike, how you doing?
Great to be with you guys again. Great to be back in football season.
Hey, Mike, we're talking, about removing turf and to going to grass. And, of course, down there in Tampa, they have grass. And One of the other an alternative is what they have in Glendale, Arizona, where you have the turf, a natural turf, and it's on a flatbed that comes in and out. And I have been in that stadium when they were getting ready for a Stones concert a number of years ago, and that is when you can have a concert because you don't have to have the grass in there. You have a concrete floor, the base, and then you can do everything that way. But it's not every location where you could have that plane of natural grass where you can slide it in and out. I think, is Las Vegas that way too? I'm not sure. I thought one of their stadiums like that. If any place, it would be Las Vegas.
I think they are.
It is Las Vegas. I thought it might be because it's probably the newest stadium. But, Mike, it's been a long time. This is their first night back in 3 months. Unfortunately, Don is now back in the hospital. You know, Frank was in, as you know, for quite a while. But let us know. We're in football season. The college season is really ginning up now because the conferences are going to be playing interconference games now. And how's everything look to you early in the season? And tell us all about plans for the bowl coming up on New Year's Day.
Well, first of all, yeah, great to be back. Sorry to hear about Don going in. Sounds like a revolving door there between you guys. So we need to stop that tradition real quick. Yeah, great to be back in college football season. We got 3 weeks under our belts here, which is pretty exciting for a couple teams. And it started out well. I would gather to say that it's been a pretty interesting season so far. Definitely some surprises already. Not only in some cases, who's winning and who's not, but just even in just in the play of some of the teams that maybe are still winning, but maybe not doing it the way they we all thought they would, and vice versa. So obviously the biggest story, nationally is Colorado. And, they're relevant again. Coach Prime has made them relevant. A lot of people, which I think it's a really neat aspect of this whole story, this is a sidebar, so many younger people, I'm not talking about just college age, but just younger adults even, don't remember Deion Sanders and what an amazing athlete he was at the time. I mean, and so, they're now getting a chance to actually know about him and his story, which makes the entire story even that much more intriguing in my mind because if you don't really know who he is, think, oh, there's this guy Flash the Pan coming along, and he's calling himself Prime and all this stuff. You don't know the history behind it, but once you learn that, you're like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. And for him to and for one of the best, greatest athletes that America has ever seen at the collegiate level and professional level, really, to now be able to be out there in a coaching capacity, not only doing a great job, but just the bringing that whole charisma with him, and showcasing a couple of his sons.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about the the apple not falling from the tree. Holy cow! his son who's the quarterback. I mean, what an athlete he is, right? So, he definitely got an awful lot of the gene pool that Deion had. So that's been a really neat story. There's been so many other surprises, up and down. I mean, Florida State is back, where they used to be for so many years. And meanwhile, you got, teams like Clemson and Alabama, who seems like they're in the national championship every single year, and you know they're struggling a bit, you know, and
right.
So you know there's so many neat storylines already this season, you know that are unexpected that you know, and like you said, and we're just now getting into conference play, you know, where it really counts. So this has just been the first few weeks when teams are playing non-conference games. I mean, imagine what's going to, you know, trying to handicap the games going forward. You know, I was looking at the games this weekend, you know, for this weekend even, and there's an awful lot of games that I don't know who to pick, you know, to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's going to be some great matchups. I mean, you got Ohio State, Notre Dame. I don't know who's going to win that one. I mean, even, you know, you got LSU, Arkansas, you got Mississippi State, South Carolina, Florida State, Clemson. You know, I don't know who to pick in any of these games. I mean, it's crazy, but it's a lot of fun because of that, I think.
And it's great for college football, and you're exactly right about Brian, because he played the Falcons game in the afternoon years ago and played for the Braves at night. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, that was just unbelievable. And what the kids think of now, I tell you, I'm involved in middle school, and I'm there every day. And I got to tell you, Mike, they're talking about them, the kids that are involved in football.
Yeah.
And they know them for the Aflac commercial with Saban. They know them about NFL Network. They had no idea about it, his family, his career. You're exactly right. But they are now learning about him and about his kids and about college football. I mean, Colorado football. And so I give him a lot of credit. I thought that one press conference when he really was burying this poor woman, and she said, well, I never asked you that question. You know, I felt so bad for her. But he was just making a statement, you know, about that when he said,
yeah.
You know, I played in college, a prime college program. I was in the NFL, 15 years, whatever. So, you know, but he's doing a great job, and I think it's great for college football overall.
Yeah, and you know, I tell you, I mean, he's very unconventional, but, you know, in a very positive way, I think. You know, he's always got great messages. I mean, if you listen to, you know, him, he's always very positive. You know, even with the kid the other night, you know, the Colorado State game, and people are like giving, you know, death threats to that kid who knocked, you know, that Hunter kid out of the game and that kind of stuff. You know, he came out there today. He said, look, he said, this is ridiculous. He said, it's football. He said, this, you know, that, you know, I've forgiven that kid. Hunter's forgiven that kid, you know, let's move on, you know, that's, you know, that kind of stuff. So, that, you know, that's the other part. I mean, he says all the right things, and it comes from the heart. You can see that. And it's just his passion and his, you know, infectious passion and charisma, basically, that is really, you know, what makes it exciting. They're not going to win every game, you know. You know, I went back and watched the replay of the fourth quarter the other day of that game. Colorado State just, you know, shot themselves in the foot about three or four different ways, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the game and in overtime. But, you know, but it's a great story. And for him to do what he did with literally a brand new team, he had 86 players, new players come into that program. And you know, he came out of the box and beat one of the teams that was in the national championship last year. You know, granted, they got smoked in the national championship, but they were still considered a really quality team last year.
Yeah.
And for him to come out, the first time these guys have ever suited up and played an actual game together, the entire team, you know, I mean, that says a lot right there. So yeah, that's been really exciting. And it's been a sort of shot in the arm for the game, for sure, and certainly for Colorado fans who have just been – I don't think they've had a decent year since they moved to the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think the point that you were making about the number of players and changes, I think I read or heard, I think there's, 56 true freshmen on his team.
I haven't seen that number at all, but I saw that initially he had 86 new players on that team, and you know, a lot of people were criticizing him before the season about running off players and all that. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, number one, the team won one game last year. So you know what? They probably got a lot of players on that team that, you know, aren't pulling their weight or probably don't need to be on that team, right? So you're going to make changes. Any coach would. And you know, the other part, too, is, and this happens so often in situations where a new coach comes in, not to a program where a coach left because he got a better job, but in programs where a coach gets fired because they're not doing well, right? Then, mm-hmm. you know, when the new guy comes in, more times than not, I would say for sure, that the new coach comes in and he has to get a hold of that team and fix the problems, right? And very, you know, typically there's a lot of players on that team, whatever sport, that maybe don't like the new guy coming in and with the new rules, and you know, maybe he's a you know harder on him or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, and they don't want to do it that way, and so you know, they choose to leave. And the thing today with the portal system is, unlike years past, you know, before the portal, you know, yeah, I mean, it was tough. You know, you come in and it's like you want, you know, the kids, you know, he's not going to play. You know, he wants, you know, he doesn't like the coach, you know, whatever. But, you know, what's he going to do, right? Because he's stuck there. Now with the portal, kids can leave, you know, and go somewhere else to play. They don't want to, they don't like the way he's coaching. They don't like the way that he's treating them, or, you know, the new rules that he's bringing to the table. Then you go in the portal and you go find someplace else, you know. So it's much easier for these kids to go find another place. And I remember him in an interview, he goes, I only talked to 20 kids about, you know, about maybe finding another place to play. He says all the rest of them just quit.
Yeah. You know,
and I'm gathering it was probably because they didn't want to buy into what he was doing. And so they just, you know, they said, hey, I'm going to the portal, I'll go somewhere else. So anyway, the long story short is that, you know, I think what he did was terrific. And it also, you know, going back to that, as well as some of these other teams winning and losing, you know, we've talked about this the last couple of years, that portal, as well as the NIL aspect of it, has really changed the dynamic of teams and understanding how teams, you know, are going to improve or maybe in some cases not improve from year to year because, you know, of all these kids moving, you know, different teams. And I think you're seeing, even like with Alabama, maybe you're seeing a situation where maybe, you know, maybe they're not getting some of the players they, you know, to backload, backfill, you know, some of the positions they're losing for kids going to the NFL. And, you know, maybe they're, you know, because of the portal, you know, they got guys that were sitting on the bench that aren't sitting on the bench anymore because they went somewhere else to play. And, you know, and then you also have situations, you know, like Colorado where you got, you know, they can bring in transfers from around the country and suddenly go from a 1-11 team to a team that's competitive. So that portal situation is you know, is really changing the faces from year to year of a lot of teams, you know, both good teams and bad teams sometimes. And, you know, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, and you and I and Frank and Don love football. And there's a interesting book out by Gary Myers, a well-known writer in New York. And it talks all about back in the 80s when Bill Parcells was the defensive coordinator for Ray Perkins when he was the Giants head coach. And when Perkins was let go, Parcells had a real adjustment because, you know, when you're a defensive coordinator, you're with the guys and you're your side of the ball. And all of a sudden now you're the CEO. And, you know, and he had to get rid of players on the Giants that he really liked because he had a look now as the overall makeup of the team. I'm anxious to read that book. But we want to talk about, I mean, you know, we have months to go. What's the process going on right now, in, you know, from your perspective, for planning for another great bowl game?
Well, we're in the mode. Obviously, you know, we've got just a few months to go here for the game, and we've got, you know, events going on. In fact, we have a VIP event tomorrow night with some of our sponsors and members and so forth. And you know, we're planning all the events leading up to the game. As you know, we have a lot of different events and activities throughout bowl week and even before that. So we're getting all those logistics planned out. Obviously, we're looking at, you know, potential, you know, who might be available as far as potential teams down the road. And again, it's really hard to predict, you know, much harder than in the past to try and predict, you know, what teams are going to be potential teams available to us at the end of the season. But there's certainly a lot of good options out there that we think are going to be there at the end of the day, at the end of the season. And we're looking forward to another great matchup on New Year's Day. So just enjoying the season just sort of enjoying – we try and enjoy the journey along the way here over the next few months.
Are you getting out to see any college games on site, Mike?
Not yet. We won't send people out until we get to November. We mm-hmm. tend to not try and we don't want to be a burden to schools to host our people this early in the year when they're trying to figure out what kind of team they have and that kind of thing. So we'll send some people out a little bit later. I'll go out to a few games just personally, just for fun. But we'll wait a little bit until we, you know, get a few more games under our belts to sort of see, you know, who might, you know, end up in that window of teams that we can choose from. But, you know, certainly with, I enjoy watching the games on TV because, you know, I got that remote taped in my hand and my wife gets confused every time she looks up the TV. We're watching a different game, you know, so she's like, wait, what game is this? But it's like,
I know.
But I love the fact that over the course from noon to midnight on Saturdays, you can watch pieces of about, you know, I don't know, 30 different games or something like that. It's ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun being able to keep up with the different teams and how they're playing and how they're looking. And like you said, this year so far, man, it's been really interesting because, you know, as I mentioned, you got Alabama last week just struggling to get past, you know, the South Florida team that won one game last year, two games last year. And, you know, because they're still trying to figure out who they are, you know, after losing so many players last year and the year before to the NFL and the portal. And so they're, you know, still trying to find their footing a little bit, you know, which it's been a while since they've done that. But, and like I said, there's other, you know, Duke comes out and plays a terrific game to start the year against, you know, Clemson. You get, you know, Florida State, you know, just, you know, taking control in the second half of the LSU game to open the year. Nobody saw that coming. So, again, it's hard to project, you know, how these teams are going to be and how they're going to do down the road. But, you know, we're starting to get in, like you said, to some really good, important games, meaning that, you know, the conference games where everybody starts beating up on each other, right, in the conferences. And, you know, the cream rises to the top. And, we, you know, just right now we just don't know who the cream is and who the rest are.
Well, I'll tell you, I moved up to Pennsylvania back in June, but I still track on the GPB app in Atlanta to see what high school teams are going to be on Friday night so I can decide which one I'm going to watch on my iPad. And and then I went to the high school game where I'm working a week ago Friday, and that was great. And I'm going to go see the middle school play this week because I have these players in class, and they keep me up to date about everything. And so
I'm really in heaven, because I'll tell you, I love to be around the younger kids, you know. Especially when you go out and you see a high school game or a middle school game, and it's all for fun, Mike. It's all for fun and dedication. And, of course, it's nothing like it is in the South, you know, up here for high school. I mean, you'll find some high schools that are strong. But I think you're right. I mean, Alabama's taken a tremendous hit, and it's amazing how you can be brought back into middle of the pack after being on the top of the mountain.
Well, you know, people have said for a very long time, right? It's like it's a fine line, right? And especially in like conferences like the SEC and all that, I don't think people appreciate how close the talent is from team to team, and how, you know, a little bit here or there can make a big difference. But like I said, I think the portal has really started to even some things out there in that regard. And like I said, it can change the face of a program. It can make a program get better a lot quicker than normal, and we've talked about that the last couple of years. But then in some cases, you know, it can hurt a program maybe, you know, because they suddenly lose a couple key players. And, you know, the thing about the Alabamas and Clemsons, and they all go through this. Florida State went through it. I mean, that you can be on top for a while, and you got the guys behind the guy, and he comes in, and he just steps right in, and here we go, another Heisman candidate. But, you know, somewhere along the way, when you're sending 10, 12, you know, guys to the NFL every year, okay, just that alone, eventually, over the courses of years after years, you know, it's going to come back on you, you know, and you're going to drop a little bit, you know, you're going to lose a step, so to speak. And so if you're not able to replace those guys, and like you said, now between the, you know, the NIL situation, where you got programs that are able to, you know, kids are able to make money going to different programs. Now they're looking at not only do they want to come to your program, do they want to do this or that, and are you going to have a competitive team, but they're also looking at the money now too. So
yeah.
And with the portal, you can have a player and he can say, oh, well, I can go over here in this program and not only maybe win more, but I can get more money. So you know, now it's like, you know, like you said, these – I feel bad for the coaches, but it's the reality. It's like not only are they having to recruit their own players to stay in their program every year, along with, you know, new kids high school kids coming in, but they're trying to go out and find other players from other programs, you know, colleges to come in, and they have to, you know, hope that their school, you know, the boosters or the sponsors or whatever. Can put together some good NIL packages for the kids, you know, because they're looking for the money too. So it's crazy right now in regards to trying to put together a team each year, and literally every year you can, you know, basically end up with having a different team to coach each year because of all these different factors that are at play here.
Well, yeah, and,
hey, guys,
and George,
hey,
go
Rod,
ahead, Rod. Frank. Yeah,
we're up against our time limit here. We have to.
We're going to talk football all night.
Yeah, right.
<We're> good.
Talk all we're in our glory.
I'm out of here.
Yeah,
you guys can do
hey,
that.
Mike,
right
thanks
ahead.
So much. Well, you know,
oh,
thanks
great,
so
great,
much.
Great
we look forward to talking to you regularly.
Thanks,
and
Mike.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks,
Frank.
For having me,
I guess that's it. The
okay. Dan, you want to lead us out?
I would love to. I just want to say that I love being part of this Fighting Words family. Pop, I love you. I hope you're doing. I hope you get better. I hope you're doing really well right now. And man, it was another good night on the show. It's been way too long. I know I don't usually do the Wednesday night show, but. Hopefully we can get up that boxing and MMA show on the weekends again. I'd love to start doing that. And know what? It was a long break, maybe a little bit too long, but definitely happy to be back. And, again, love to be a part of this Fighting Words family. See you all next time.
We were glad to have you.
Thank you.
And we appreciate it.
We're back to Wednesday. We're back to Saturday night too, Caden. So be ready.
I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be there.
Oh, there you go.
Hopefully I don't work. Hopefully I don't work.
All right.
Hey Frank, listen. Prayers are answered. Next week, or is it going to be back to 9:20 or 9:25, whatever?
It'll be 9:30 next week. Yeah.
9:30. Okay. And hopefully Don will be back, and we'll have everything.
Right.
And I think the Phillies may. I know they're home this weekend. I've talked to him, you know, he's looking forward to you being well, and looking forward to being on. So we'll get a whole cast of our regular cast.
Okay. We're just putting us off the air now.
Oh, have a great week. Take care.
You too.